Our fourth case for this morning is Price v. Board of Education of the City of Chicago. Mr. Gilgan.
Gilgan, actually.
Gilgan.
May it please the Court, I would like to begin with what I hope no one in this case can seriously dispute, which is that Lillyette Price had some kind of property right in her employment. Under Illinois law, she held what is called a permanent appointment, and as a Chicago public school teacher, this circuit in Harbaugh, which was decided just about a half a year ago, said that she has what is called a, quote, legitimate expectation of continued employment. But prior to her layoff in this case, she had not a scrap of due process.
So let me tell you what bothers me about this, Mr. Gagan. Perhaps before the Chicago Teachers Union decision of the Illinois Supreme Court, you might have had a stronger argument, and this court actually was tending in that direction. But in the bundle of property interests that goes along with status as a tenured teacher in the Chicago public schools, earlier the argument had made one stick in that bundle was the kind of right prior to an economic layoff to be considered for other vacancies. And it's my reading of the Illinois Supreme Court's decision that they said no, at least after the 1995 change in state law, however contradictory that may seem to our lay concept of tenure, they said that's just not a stick in the bundle. And if that's the case, then the very first step she needs to prove, namely the existence of the particular property interest you're relying on, doesn't exist. It has to come from state law. So I would appreciate you discussing that.
Sure. In the previous case, the CTU case, CTU was arguing that there was no substantive state law right to be considered for recall after she had lost her employment.
Right. And I get that. And you're saying after and before are different. But it seems to me the property interest either exists or it doesn't. And if it does exist, sometimes post-deprivation procedures are enough. Sometimes you also have to have pre-deprivation procedures. There are different ways of adjusting this. But I'm having trouble with your pre- and post-distinction.
I understand the difference. And a post-deprivation procedure might even be appropriate here. But remember, in the previous CTU case, we were not challenging the layoff decision, so there wasn't even a need for a post-deprivation procedure with respect to the layoff decision.
But weren't you challenging the existence of a property interest?
Of course.
Yeah.
But the issue in that case became whether or not Section 1831 of the Illinois School Code provided a recall procedure that would take away the issue. CTU's argument was that we're going with Powell. We're not going to challenge the layoff. The layoff is okay. That's what Powell said. As you know, Mims disagreed with it. But CTU said, we're going with Powell and not Mims. And this court said, it's on page 228 of 640 Fed Third, the original panel decision, in Mims, unlike here, unlike the teachers here, the plaintiffs were bringing a due process claim. There was no due process claim about the layoff decision. What is different about this case is that Ms. Price is challenging the layoff decision, and whether that should be done in a pre-deprivation or post-deprivation is a different question, but there wasn't even a post-deprivation issue with respect to the layoff decision in the original CTU case.
Well, I'm having the same problem trying to see what the difference is that you're trying to make, and the current version does not contain any reserve teacher system. You agree with that?
I do.
And which would allow tenured teachers to remain employed by the board once their positions are eliminated, and they don't get first priority to fill vacant positions. So I don't understand where in the statute you're trying to say that there's some legitimate expectation of continued employment.
Well, first of all, I'd like to quote what the Illinois Supreme Court said, because I think that might answer your question. Before the Illinois Supreme Court, CTU argued that there was no due process issue before the court. And the court did say, and we quote page 926 of 963 Northeast 2nd, we agree with the union that this set of certified questions does not require this court to give an opinion as to the procedures that the due process clause of the 14th Amendment may require. So viewed, the issue is one of federal constitutional law. And with respect to the reserve teacher procedure, we're getting back into the MIMS issue. So we were arguing, really, that there, CTU was arguing, I should say, that there was a recall procedure. We weren't bringing any challenge about the layoff procedure. And the issue was whether the 1995 law changed the recall procedure. Remember, in MIMS, MIMS said, we don't care about the recall procedure. That's after the property right has been lost, or not lost, depending on how you
Well, and the property right based on the different state law that was at issue in MIMS. So, I mean, there's another question about that. I guess I still think before you start talking about necessary procedures, you have to show that you have a property interest.
I agree.
And that property interest is usually, and in this case would be, grounded in state law.
We agree.
So that wasn't before the Illinois Supreme Court. But unless we have a property interest for this particular aspect of employment, there is no procedure that's due. If these people had been within their first 60 days of probation and the CPS decided for whatever reason it didn't want them, then they would be let go.
Of course, we agree with that. She can certainly be let go if there are no vacant positions for her to fill prior to layoff. And it's important to
emphasize. But that's, you're saying, though, that one of the rights she has is a tenured teacher. And, you know, it, intuitively, maybe it should be. I don't know anything about what's in the CBA. I have no idea about other sources of law. But it's just in terms of the raw statutory grounds, I don't see where a right to be moved to a different vacant position exists.
And
if you can show me, then that's great. We can move on to whether you need a full-blown hearing or whether a Matthews against Eldridge abbreviated hearing is okay or whatever. I mean, there are all kinds of other procedural issues.
Your Honor, there is no state law that gives her a right to a vacant position prior to layoff. That is a federal due process right. And the basic.
Why is that a due process right, though? You're talking about a substantive attribute of employment, just like she might have a right, you know, to work a certain number of hours in a day, or she might have a right to a pension, or she might have a right to various other things. These are substantive attributes.
But it is a procedural check to make sure that a good faith economic layoff really is a good faith economic layoff.
Well, I understand your concern that somebody might say, as the Chicago Board of Education may have done, gee, all these experienced tenured teachers are way too expensive. Let's lay them off and bring in neophytes.
And that's what's happening.
Yeah. I mean,
and state law is silent as to procedures prior to layoff. And the fact that state law is silent as to procedures during layoff does not defeat the property right. That's what the 14th Amendment is for. And that's what MIMS says. MIMS says that this is a question, and that's the basic question before this court. Is the right to be considered for a vacant position a procedural right or a substantive right? And is that a question of federal law or state law? We submit that the right to a check to make sure that a good faith economic layoff is a good faith economic layoff is a procedural right on her property right. It's not a substantive right. And because it is a procedural right, the fact that it's not in Section 8.1 is not a question of state law. The state has no procedures to protect Ms. Price from layoff, good faith or otherwise. That is what Loudermill says the federal courts are supposed to do. And we quote the Loudermill at page 11.
No, I mean, I think you've articulated very nicely what the decision is. If you want to save a minute for rebuttal,
that
would be the time to do it. Okay, thank you. Ms. Scott.
Yes. Thank you and good morning. My name is Sally Scott, and I represent the defendant appellees, in this case the Board of Education and Barbara Bird Bennett. And I agree, and we agree, with the questions that you're positing to counsel, because the threshold question in a due process case always is there a property right that exists that then receives protection by the 14th Amendment?
So Mr. Gagan makes the argument that the employer is, after all, the Chicago Board of Education. It's not John F. Kennedy School or this school or that school, and that teachers are hired to be teachers and indeed subject to assignment anywhere within the Chicago Public Schools. So it's very hard at some level to see why one of the property rights in that package, or the property right, is the right to a job at the public schools, and it's an immaterial detail. If school A doesn't need you, then you get moved to school B. And only if, for example, student population goes down or there are budgetary issues and say you've got to change student-teacher ratios or whatever, I can imagine lots of things that would justify economic layoffs. So maybe you could talk about that for a minute.
Yes, so I think that issue has been addressed by both the Supreme Court decisions in Land and in the CTU case, because in Land, the court was very clear that 3484 and its provision regarding a permanent appointment did not apply in the context of a reduction in force, which is the context that we're talking about here.
But there's some contest about whether it's really a reduction in force. I mean, I don't know, maybe there's a net reduction in force somehow, but their allegation is people are laid off allegedly on economic grounds, and then the CPS is happily hiring, the Board of Education is hiring new people all the time.
The Supreme Court, in its decision, noted that it was undisputed that this was a legitimate economic layoff, and they did note that in their decision regarding these same layoffs. Also, if you look at the complaint, the relief that's requested is a right to a hearing or a right to the vacancies. Both are asked for in the complaint. There's no allegation that this is a pretextual layoff or a non-economic layoff. There are 25,000 teachers within CPS. There are always some hirings that occur at any given time. It was not thousands of hirings, as was suggested by counsel.
Yeah, there was some huge difference between the two. You said 200, and they said a much bigger number.
We quoted their one paragraph, the complaint, where it said initially said 200 teachers were laid off. In fact, there was about 1,289 teachers that were laid off. Approximately 800 of them actually were rehired shortly or for that school year. So the actual number laid, and it was both tenured and non-tenured that were laid off, to be clear about that also. But so, as I said, the Land Court said Section 3484 and its provisions on permanent appointment do not apply in the context of a layoff. That was reaffirmed by the Supreme Court in the CTU case, that there is not a property right that allows for continued employment in the context of a layoff, and that there is no right to vacancies.
So how would somebody challenge a layoff as pretextual? What would the person do? I mean, because it sounds to me like perhaps after the CTU case, the Illinois definition of tenure really just, it's a very weak definition. It just means, you know, if you're accused of molesting, you know, students and you have a hearing and it turns out that you didn't do it and, you know, you have been wrongfully accused, you can't lose your job. But you can lose your job if the CPS decides to lay you off just because it's tired of paying you.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would say it's not quite as broad as that, and as I said, it's not our case where the layoffs were challenged. They are, you know, good faith economic layoffs. However,
so could they be challenged by a tenured teacher saying you have, in fact, violated my property right as a teacher with a right to a job because you laid me off, not for valid economic reasons?
I believe that there is a post-deprivation process that's available. There is a collective bargaining agreement that applies, and any of the tenured teachers who believe that a retaliatory motive, for example, was the impetus, or that this was disguised for a cause termination, could file a grievance under the procedure, the grievance procedure in the collective bargaining
agreement.
Is it
limited to just those instances where it would be retaliation? Or, I mean, could it be just that they thought, not retaliation, but I'm being paid at such a high salary, they want to save money, but I don't really believe that's true. Can they use that post-deprivation hearing for that?
They could file a grievance on most anything that they wanted to file a grievance on if they found it to fall underneath one of the provisions of the collective bargaining agreement.
And that's what I'm asking, under the provisions of the collective bargaining agreement, could a scenario like that fall under one of those provisions?
I believe that they could file a grievance.
And what provision would it fall under?
I believe it falls under Appendix H of the Collective Bargaining Agreement, but honestly, that is the layoff provision in the Collective Bargaining Agreement.
And does it have a, you know, seniority or, you know, just anybody, does it in any way regulate the economic layoff process?
It provides rights to laid off teachers, who are tenured, in a layoff depending on the reason of the layoff. So they get different rights if it's a school closing, if it's a reduction in students, if it's economic reasons.
So all those things are actually spelled out in the bargaining agreement.
They are spelled out in the collective bargaining agreement. Yes, they are.
So then if one challenged it, really didn't believe the reasons, you could allege all these different things.
They could allege those things. They also could allege a state court complaint, because the board does have the right to set its budget and it has the right to make its economic decisions. If they believed that was an arbitrary and capricious abuse of its power, there's also state court proceedings that could apply as well. Or if they believe the CPS did not follow Section 3484 and 3485, there is the possibility of a state court complaint that could be filed as well.
And this post-deprivation proceeding, when would it kick in? When a teacher got notice that she was going to be laid off? Or when did it, just so I can understand what you mean?
I mean, it's initiated when the employee files a grievance. Mm-hmm. Certainly they could do that when they receive the notice of layoff. Okay. And then there are time limits set forth in the collective bargaining agreement for processing of the grievance.
And then is there any kind of timing of a resolution of the issue, so that, you know, it could be resolved before they were actually laid off? Are there time limits that way as well?
There are time limits for processing the grievance, although I do not think it would be resolved prior to the time of the layoff. As a practical matter, there's time involved in going through the grievance process and going through an arbitration hearing. One point, too, I want to address that Mr. Gagan raised. He said that they were challenging the layoff decisions in this case, but the complaint is very clear. What they're asking for is a right to the vacancies that existed within CPS. And quite simply, it's our position that Section 3484, which is the provision, I believe, in which counsel's relying, says nothing about a tenured teacher's right in a layoff. That Price has not identified a state law which gives her protected property interest in continued employment in the context of a reduction in force. And that doesn't matter whether it's immediately prior to or immediately after the layoff. If there's not a property right there, it's not based on is it 5 minutes before the layoff or 5 minutes after the layoff. The property right is not there and does not exist.
It's interesting. If there's a reduction, if you want to reduce the number of teachers by 200 and you lay off 1,200 and you rehire 1,000, you've changed the teacher's interest in their job quite profoundly, it seems to me.
That's not what happened in this case.
Would you find a problem with that?
If it was not in fact a RIF, which I think your example is suggesting, if it's actually a discharge of teachers for reasons other than a RIF, then I think the post-deprivation remedies we were just talking about come into play. Again, that is not our case, and that is not factually what happened in our case.
One of the things that is missing was before and after last case, and maybe now, about the board setting up a series of regulations that deal with a lot of this stuff. It seemed that the Supreme Court and of Illinois and others have said that they have the capacity to do that. and have not. And until that happens, I think a lot of these things are being addressed, have to be dealt with as if whether or not those regs that they that the board puts together have been properly followed.
During the collective bargaining that was occurring that led to the strike and was resolved after the strike, procedures were negotiated between the board and the CTU that addressed what rights teachers have, tenured teachers have, that are laid off in an economic reduction in force. So I think many of the issues that percolated have actually since been resolved through that negotiation process.
So that's where they go if they're either applied or not applied. There should be some rule or reg or whatever within that context as opposed to something that's beyond that and trying to establish some property right or something, some federal intervention.
Yeah, and the, what's been negotiated is prospective, not retroactive. These layoffs occurred before those contract terms were negotiated.
But that's all that was missing before, and that's, I mean, I thought the district judge went through all of that.
I'm out of time, so unless you had any other questions.
Apparently not. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Anything further, Mr. Gagan?
Just briefly, there is no collective bargaining procedure that provides this kind of procedural right that we're seeking to protect a property right. The issue of what is in the collective bargaining agreement is not in the record. It's never been before this court until this today, and we disagree with the board's characterization as to what the collective bargaining agreement provides. And the strike settlement does not resolve this issue. In the end, our case is pretty simple. It's that state law cannot determine the procedural safeguards to protect a permanent appointment. And there are no procedural safeguards in Section 8.1, but that doesn't defeat the property interest. That is what the 14th Amendment is before. And if they want to lay off qualified teachers and bring in unqualified new hires off the street, they should do what was done in Indiana. They should change the state law and get rid of permanent appointment and not ask this court to overrule MIMS, Loudermill, and in effect disregard Loudermill, which says that the determination of what is appropriate procedural safeguard before the property right is lost, not after, before it's lost, is a question purely of federal law.
Thank you. All right. Thank you very much. Thanks to both counsel. We'll take the case under advisement.